I'm Jason Hawk. He's at Richard Smith, and she's Allison Downing. This is Remote Patrol, the show where Allison is getting really fed up, I think, with our enthusiasm about the X-Files. Is that right? Accurate?
No, it's okay. I quite like these two.
Oh, so you're not going to force us to stop after tonight because you're all grumpy pants?
No, am I ever? Am I ever? No, I'm not going to force you to stop.
Well, no, I proposed the whole 15 episodes of X-Files thing, and you said no.
Yeah, so that's no.
No, we can do 15 now. That's what I heard you say.
No, that's not what I said at all. I said I'm not going to stop you right now, but this is only four in. Four is a long way from 15.
Oh, this is only three.
Yeah, this is the third X-Files episode.
All right, okay. So I'm like four is cool.
Do you want to do another one? Because we were genuinely going to stop tonight.
I'm being cool, Wally. I'm being fine with it. But oh, I'm right. Not fine with 15.
You're the parent that's letting me get an ear pierced, aren't you?
Yeah, but I'm still not allowing you to buy any crap technology for the next 2 weeks. So, you know, rules is rule.
I was actually
rule,
just
going to
order some new headphones.
Boundaries.
For you.
But... Oh, headphones
for
me.
Oh, have we gone back on that? No, you said crap technology.
No, I just said crap technology.
You genuinely need some headphones. That's not me going, hey, I want a Roku for no reason.
Yeah.
I understand.
I'm not going to research which one at all. I'll just buy this one.
It was the middle one. What do you want from me? So we could do another one. There is stuff to do for another one. I'm prepared to do another one.
You and I had kind of talked a little bit about trying to like fit in everything tonight that we wanted to talk about because Allison was so intent on getting through it. But maybe we can take the pace a little bit slower now.
Do you know what I'd like to do? I would be sad to leave the X-Files having never covered a Robert Patrick episode.
We need to do that, yes, because honestly, my exposure to that part of the X-Files is so small, I really don't even have a basis to form an opinion.
There's a couple that really stick in my head, but I need to figure out which ones they are to be able to tell you which ones they are. So I will pick some. I'll pick a couple.
And I'd kind of like to sit and watch the finale, too.
Oh, the end's brilliant. Oh, this is two more episodes, you see.
Stop it.
Do I hear three? Can we go three? Any bidders for three?
Because the end is... Surely the end is... That's a whole episode of this. And then...
Have we done this with any other show, fanboys?
We've done it with several shows. Quantum Leap was several parts. Most
I think
of
we
season
did
one
five.
Of this show. Yeah,
I think we did five episodes of Quantum Leap.
Five episodes.
For our listeners, they're all on our SoundCloud page in playlist form. I did that. I made little playlists of all the multi-part episodes.
Well, there you go, Jason. If you can have five Quantum Leaps, then you can have five X-Files.
We got to five! We got to five!
Really?
That's
you see, I'm a reasonable human being. I'm really okay.
Do I hear six?
No, no. Pack it in.
To anyone who doesn't like us talking about the X-Files, I bid you a fond farewell. I appreciate the time you spent with us so far, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
That's if they come back after all your mold.
Well, why would
loving.
You not? Why would you not? Why would you, like, if you're the kind of person that's like, oh, they talked about the X-Files for too long, and even though I know they're not talking about it anymore, I'm done with them.
I have so much to report that's kind of linked to that. Guess who I've got hooked on the X-Files?
Lisa.
Mrs. Jason. Yes, Lisa is roped in.
No way.
I'm so happy to report this to you. Okay, so we've been watching an episode just about every night. And of course, we have kids and they get up late and it stops the whole thing. So we've missed a few nights, but we're very much, I'd say about two-thirds of the way through season one. And look, with Lisa, that is a big, big deal. Like Lisa
That's
doesn't
huge.
Sit through anything, right? She doesn't she doesn't commit to an entire series. I've never had her sit and watch anything on a regular basis except like Full House or Golden Girls.
I think that's probably why she doesn't like so much things, because she hasn't developed relationships with things the same way that you have.
But she likes the X-Files.
Well, that's amazing. I'm so
it
pleased
is.
For you. I am so pleased for you.
So my goal is to get her at least once a night to stand up and scream at the TV, that guy's a damned alien.
I think that is a very honorable use of your time. I support that fully.
Hey, I only have so much energy in the tank these days, but I'm willing to devote it to that end.
That sounds fantastic. Look forward to that adventure for you. That's great.
But you guys don't really understand. I can't iterate enough how kind of a caliber of win this is for me. Because Lisa is many great things, but she's never liked Star Wars. She won't sit and watch Star Trek with me. She's not going to go see Avengers 2 with me in a couple weeks. For the most part, not all the time, but she just thinks most fiction is kind of a waste because it doesn't have any utility from day to day in her life.
Yeah. There's no point to it.
Yes, it doesn't enrich her in any way. It doesn't clean the house. It doesn't get the bills paid. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't get her outside and enjoying the sunshine.
Okay.
It's not that she's a boring shrew. She's not. She just wants to have something to show for her things.
Well,
they're
all perfectly valid arguments for getting off your ass. They really are. And I wish I was more like that. But there are some things that will just plant me on my ass in front of the TV until I'm done with it and it's gone. And there are no more.
Yeah. But this means that, well, first of all, back when we first started watching this a few weeks ago, you know, we started kind of in the middle of things. For remote patrol, I mean.
Yeah.
And Lisa kept on creeping in. We've talked about this. She sat and watched one, and she sat and watched another. And then it was about 3 weeks ago now. She kind of turned and looked at me and said, I want to see this from the beginning. And I got all tingly down in my pants.
I bet you did. You got a warm sensation all over.
I got so excited, but I tried to play it really cool. And then we just kept watching them and watching them. But I did go back. She wanted to start from season one, episode one. We went back. Did you guys start there as well? I mean, this time around?
Well, Richard had them on. I think you had them on, didn't you?
But we were actually just watching them at random anyway. And it was when Ian came over.
It was when Ian came over and stayed. And we chugged a load, didn't we?
We did. But I don't know. I've watched them from the beginning through to the end many times. At least twice since they've been on Netflix.
You know how with a lot of shows you kind of want to skip the first 10 episodes or the first season and just get into where, oh, it gets good after the 12th episode, or oh, it gets good in season 2.
Yeah, there's none of that.
Right.
Here.
No, The X-Files is brilliant right from the beginning and I totally forgot it. We popped on that very first episode. And I was like, holy crap, he's eating sunflower seeds right in the first episode. They got the aliens in the first episode. They've got the whole mythology starting. I mean, it's clearly not, you know, it hasn't taken shape or form yet. But the foundations of everything that happens in The X-Files are right there. The cigarette-smoking man is in episode one.
Is he?
He is. He's right there. It was just executed perfectly. Chris Carter knew exactly what he was doing.
Can't tell you how irritated I am by this.
What? That you're enjoying The X-Files?
I'm going to have to do it.
You're an intelligent, living human being. Why would you not enjoy The X-Files?
Like, I have a jigsaw box pretty much in front of me that's only got about 40% of the pieces inside it. I can't do a puzzle. I have to find the pieces first. I have to go down the back of the sofa and look in every drawer to find these pieces so I can at least see the whole picture, because I don't know what I'm looking at. You know, I'm only getting snapshots. I don't know what the arc is. I don't know what the end is. I don't know who the Smoky Man is. I don't know.
Well, The X-Files is really good about not telling you everything ever, I think. I mean, there's still lots of questions to be answered. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, there are.
Even though I didn't admittedly see a lot of the Robert Patrick stuff, so there might be more there than I'm aware of. But
yeah, as far as I know, there is still stuff to be wrapped up, and that's something that will happen in the 6 new episodes, allegedly.
But right from the beginning, yeah, first 2 episodes are formative, especially the second one. I mean, the first one is great as it is, but the second one, you get UFOs, you get the government abducting Mulder, you get them erasing his memory, you get that iconic shot where whether it's a military craft or a UFO or a hybrid of some sort, it comes down, it shines its spotlight on him, and you get that camera pan up from ground level where he's shielding his eyes against the big spotlight. It's all so good. You've got to go back and watch it.
We will do this, I think.
Yeah. That was a grudging. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you'll love it.
Yeah.
You'll love it.
And in episode 2, you get Seth Green.
Okay. I don't specifically remember, but yes, probably. Everyone's in this show at some point.
Oh, the list of guest stars is incredible. And actually, that's kind of something that we had talked about focusing on tonight. Since I think the episodes that we were looking at, were DPO from season 3.
Yeah, what does DPO stand for? Because that has been boxing me.
Well, this show, this episode is all about Giovanni Ribisi's character before he was famous. He's the main character in this show, the X-File that Mulder and Scully go after. And his name is, Darren Patrick Oswald?
Oh, right. So there is initials. I see. Right.
DPO.
I see.
And we also watched the postmodern Prometheus from season 5, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
That was awesome.
But there were a couple that we talked about watching. I'm not sure that we actually did. I mean, I went and watched these, but I can't remember whether it was because we agreed to or just because I got greedy. But did you watch Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose?
Not as a direct result of this show, but let me look up which one that is.
Was it the one after DPO?
Yeah, the one with Peter...
the one with Peter Boyle.
And then you cut in.
Well, no, I don't know that Alison's seen that one, but I'm very familiar with it.
Okay.
No, I haven't seen it.
And I also got a little bit greedy and went and watched Jose Chung's From Outer Space from season 4.
I think I'm just going to work my way through all of them now again.
Yeah, I'll come with you.
Why not? No, we're nearly done with Third Rock from the Sun.
I know, gosh.
You can't see it, but I'm doing a little dance in my chair. It's a white man has no rhythm and is fairly fat, so he can't move very much dance. But it's that is a dance.
Just a little bit of a bounce going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting my groove on. I think that's the nomenclature, right?
It really is, yeah. So Gianni Ribisi, he's weird, isn't he? He's always been weird. I think he was born weird.
He's weird in this episode for sure. He's the only one in the town who has a very, very deeply affected Southern drawl.
Yes, he is.
And I'm not sure whether he's playing mentally retarded or not.
I think he just plays stupid.
I don't think he's stupid, Ethan. I think he's got issues. He's got social issues. He doesn't know how to bond with people. But is that which came first? His problem? Or the inability to connect with people properly. You don't know, do you? Because he's got a big problem.
He's been in lots of stuff.
I bet he's been weird in everything.
Isn't it?
He plays kook, and he does it so well. He's such a kooky guy. He's brilliant.
Do you remember, though, where you first saw him? I mean, how did you become aware of Giovanni Ribisi? Really, that late?
My two dads. There you go. You weren't expecting that, were you?
No, that's a way far back callback.
Yeah, he was one of, what was the girl's name? Nicole's boyfriends. Because there was the nerdy kid.
My two dads
was a sitcom is it the late 80s, early 90s? Something like that. I'm only hazy memories of the time. Where there was this woman who had a daughter and she died, but she didn't know who the father was or something like that. And it was one of these two guys who used to be best friends until they fell out over this woman. And so when she dies, she's like, well, now you two have to raise the little girl. Because you can do that, apparently.
No, you see, we've got Jeremy Kyle now, and you go on and you have a paternity test, and then that decides on telly.
It was kind of like an Odd Couple meets Three Men and a Baby meets kind of but this was a show and it ran for a couple of years.
My Two Dads, 1987 to 1990, he played Corey Kupkis, 30 episodes of that show he was in. I didn't even know that he was related to that whatsoever.
There you go.
I saw him on a couple of episodes lately of Married with Children.
Oh, yes. He goes out with the daughter, doesn't he, for a bit?
Yeah.
Does he? Really? Yeah.
And I'm looking at IMDb. It says that he was credited as Vonny Ribisi back then because he was trying to be all cool.
Vonny. Right.
Oh, he was in My Two Dads as well. Look at that. Corey Kupkis as Vonny Ribisi.
I see.
But of course, he's been in all kinds of things. Saving Private Ryan was quite a prominent role for him. He was the medic. The postman. Nobody saw that.
Oh, I like The Postman. I'm alone on that, but I like it.
You really are. Wow.
Yeah. It's okay.
Boiler Room, I feel, was his high point. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Boiler Room 2000. He was the lead in that. And he wasn't being weird. So that was his kind of his peak. And since then, it's just been, you know, well, lots of stuff. Friends, obviously. He was in Lost in Translation. I don't remember. I must have been asleep.
Yeah.
Cold Mountain, Flight of the Phoenix.
He was Scarlett Johansson's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Husband.
Oh, was he really?
Husband, yeah.
Wow. He was also Nick Cage's brother in Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah. He was in My Name is Earl, Public Enemy, Avatar, of course. The Rum Diaries, Ted, Gangster Squad. I wanted that to be better than it was. A Million Ways to Die in the West, and he's got 3 upcoming projects. He's doing all right.
He doesn't stop working, does he? He's got 89 acting credits. That's not too shabby for someone who's probably, what, 40?
He is exactly 40, according to his IMDb anyway. He'll be 41 in December.
Very good.
Did you guys like DPO? Is that a good episode?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like it. I like the darkness of it. And I also got that nice retro feel of the arcade.
An arcade. You haven't seen one of those in a very long time, have you?
No. There's some in malls around here, but they've all tended to close. Atari Game Centers. And that was it, really, wasn't it? Do you ever see one?
I don't remember a time when arcades were really around here as a prominent thing.
There were...
Like, there's a lot. I've heard, you know, I've heard Jason talk about it. I've heard people like Rim and Scott talk about it a lot and that sort of thing about being a kid and going down to the arcade. It just didn't happen here. There were such things as arcades, but not for gaming, really.
You got them at theme parks and at holiday places, but they're not a downtown thing that you can...
Yeah.
You know, you were on holiday if you were at an arcade.
You might get a couple of arcade games at bowling alleys.
Bowling
and that
alleys,
sort of thing.
Yeah,
I don't remember full-fledged arcades being everywhere, but in the 80s and the early 90s, you could find them very, very easily. You couldn't go anywhere, though. You couldn't go 10 feet without finding some sort of a cabinet machine, you know, Pac-Man in a corner or Defender or something. Mm.
There's cafes downtown that still have them, but not quite the same as we had in the 80s with the tabletop Pac-Man and
You've
Space
never
Invaders.
Seen anyone playing them, though, have you?
Yeah, I used to when I was a kid, but you
no, I mean now.
Now, no, not really.
The number of takeaways I've been in after nightclubs where you sit waiting for your burger and there's an arcade machine in the corner, you've never seen anyone play that. Never, ever. Like, why is it there? Can't be worth the electricity to run it.
Maybe.
And it's something like Gallagher it's running. It's terrible.
Well, Giovanni Ribisi may or may not be running the arcade on his own power in this episode. Could you figure out whether he was powering all the machines? Because this is the one, in case listeners haven't twigged to it, this is the one where he can control lightning and apparently any form that electricity takes, really?
I didn't think he was powering machines.
No,
I never got
I didn't
that feeling.
Think he was powering the machines.
He could clearly control them in a switch them off when he wants kind of way, but I didn't think he was controlling
them. I don't think he's got that level of control over what he does with his electricity.
There were some really cool little, just little subtle things. Like, did you notice that when he was playing his favorite game, he wasn't actually, for some of it at least, he wasn't actually touching the controls?
Yeah.
I thought
that
was pretty neat.
Yeah, he wasn't touching it. Which does kind of suggest that he's got more of a relationship with electronics, not just electricity. So it's not really explained, is it? It's just...
Well, it's an X-File,
we see what
Allison.
He does. Yeah.
Yeah.
We see what he does and what happens to him.
That never
but it
occurred
should.
To me that this is the beauty of this show, that at no point do they have to explain anything. It's the X-Files. They can end it and go, well, we don't know.
We don't know.
And they so often do. I mean, this episode, like countless others, ends up with the guy sat in a little room and people looking at him through a tiny window in the door.
But that's what upsets me. They've got him in a padded cell. He's under lock and key. There are people who are watching him. Shouldn't they be studying him? I mean, by the time that we leave this episode, we should know how he does everything.
I think they just that's during the breaks. It was lunchtime we saw him. And testing will resume in the afternoon, I think. And plus, it may take them years to learn everything about him.
Yeah. He might not cooperate.
Yeah.
What they have to do is make sure he can't do anything with electricity.
But in the real world, what would have happened is that the very next day, there would have been a huge, like, 8-inch tall headline across the top of every newspaper in America saying, holy fucking shit, boy controls electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah, there would be. And
changes human evolution forever.
superconductor lightning killer on the loose.
I just think they do well to prevent a sort of X-Men style scenario playing out by the end of the X-Files. When we all these people we encounter with special powers and things like that, it's just like no one tries to rob banks with them and that sort of thing.
They all
kills
kind of
Spider-Man.
Go in the back of a car as well, don't they? They all get arrested and taken in the back of a car.
It's
like a full armed response unit and special trucks with, you know, armored.
Like Giovanni Ribisi should have to be in a plastic cell floating in the middle of a huge room.
Well, exactly.
And that sort of thing, you know. It should take Wolverine to
that
break
has
him out.
No electricity supply whatsoever.
Exactly.
There can't be a socket in that room, really. If there's a socket in that room, it's all over. But why does the lightning visit him?
We don't know. We'll never know. It just does, okay? Why is the sky blue? We don't know.
We kind of do, but that's another subject for another show.
We know exactly why the sky is blue. Wavelengths and...
I know.
Why is Jack Black in this episode? That's a better question.
Why is Jack Black... that wasn't the question. You carried on.
Is Jack Black in this episode?
Okay. Yeah, he's just there, isn't he?
Why not? Because he's just a person
at this point. He's got to be slightly weird, mate, who's... Well, you don't know. He's the foil, isn't he? You don't know whether he's in on it and understands everything about his friend or not. Whether they are friends. All that kind of stuff.
Or do you mean, why did they get Jack Black to do that role?
It's very hard to watch this episode and sit there and say, okay, we're watching Giovanni Ribisi and Jack Black not be stars because they're not stars yet. And Jack Black is skinny, and what the hell is going on? I don't know, it's like a weird version of the Bends.
It is a bit. Mm. It is a bit. The biggest thing Jack Black had done before this was Waterworld. He was in Waterworld. Did you know that?
No.
Well, I didn't know that.
I haven't sat through Waterworld.
What did he do?
It is credited simply with the word pilot.
Hmm.
So he was a pilot of something. He was also in Neverending Story 3 and Demolition Man. I did not know that either. He was a wasteland scrap in Demolition Man.
I've spot him in Demolition Man. That's one of those ones like Elijah Wood in Back to the Future 2.
It is, indeed. But yeah, he did Waterworld, then straight onto The X-Files. He was busy in 95. He also did Dead Man Walking with Sean Penn.
You know, Giovanni Ribisi was trying so hard to act, and I kind of think that Jack Black casually came in and out-acted him without even trying. This is a role for who he is, though. He was just being Jack Black, toned down ever so slightly.
Yeah. And he fits the kind of character who might hang out in arcades and play games and, you know.
I'm trying to figure out if I allow myself to like Jack Black. I think I do.
It's a rule of diminishing returns. The further time progresses, the less you can like Jack Black.
What's he done lately? I don't think I've seen him in anything for ages.
I think I stopped paying attention around School of Rock time.
School of Rock was fun, and he did that thing with British TV, did the Lilliput thing, didn't he?
I don't think that was British TV. I think that was just a production that was so cheap, he just kept lots of people from British TV.
Oh, Ted Danson was Gulliver.
No, that was in the series in which Ted Danson was Gulliver. That was an entirely different production.
That was a miniseries on what? NBC way back in the 1991, 1992 stretch?
Really?
I remember that.
I'm getting the two things transposed in my mind.
I remember watching that with my mum.
Yeah, there was the short term that the networks were trying to do those literary crossovers, first because they were cheap, but second because they could slap these huge ensemble casts in there. The other one was The Odyssey with Demolition Man.
Wesley Snipes.
No. Actually, I'm getting it mixed up with Judge Dredd. Who was the bad guy in Judge Dredd?
Is it Armand something?
Asante.
Yes.
Armand Asante. Yeah, he was Odysseus.
Right. I don't remember that one, but we got the Ted Danson one over here. Definitely remember that one. But Alison's getting that mixed up with the recent Gulliver's Travels film with Jack Black and Emily Blunt and lots of people from British television.
Which was 2010.
I have seen it.
And he played Gulliver.
And everybody connected with that product should be ashamed of themselves. That's the best way I can review that for you. You should be ashamed of yourself, all of you, all of you. So
try and watch the Ted Danson one. It was good.
There are probably many adaptations of Gulliver's Travels. No, it's really quite good. A good story to do in that way. And of course, there was the theme park near wherever it is. I don't know. Gulliver's Kingdom. Where's that?
Where is that?
It's a really shitty theme park.
It sounds fun.
No, it's awful. It's awful. I think it might be closed.
Is it Gulliver's World or Gulliver's Kingdom?
It was Gulliver's Kingdom.
Gulliver's World is a theme park located in the west of Warrington in England.
Yeah, it's not good.
It includes a man-made lake near Old Hall and Callans. It has a large wooden roller coaster called the Antelope.
But anyway, Jack Black's been... He's still busy. He's got Kung Fu Panda 3 coming up. Yeah. And other things too. He's always working. But, and he's good in that... what is it? The one with... All words and names have gone.
The You're record talking about shop High one. Fidelity.
I am, thank you.
High
yes.
Fidelity. Yeah,
because all things come back to High Fidelity.
They do indeed.
Such a good movie.
The Big Year with Steve Martin. Book. That it's was a book. Nice film.
A good year.
Yeah, the bird watching film. Do you remember that one at all?
Not at all.
That's how nice it was. It's a 2011 film. It has Steve Martin, Jack Black, and Owen Wilson. It's I don't know. It's the film equivalent of Ready Salted Crisps. It's just, it is. It won't upset you, but, you know, when you want to watch a film, you're like, oh, I want it better than this, but all right, you know. It's just nice. It was nice. It was about a competition of everybody wanting to see as many birds throughout the year as they could. It's hard to make that upsetting, to be honest.
What's really interesting is that Jack Black doesn't get his own entry on this list that we were looking at. You remember this list of the 54 best celebrity X-Files cameos that you sent me the other week?
I do remember that list. I have it here.
MTV.com made it. Giovanni Ribisi's number one at the top of the list, so it's a perfect spot to launch off. But bonus cameo, Jack Black co-starred in the same episode as one of the unlucky electrocuted. That's the only mention Jack Black gets on this list.
He deserved much more of a credit than that. He had lines.
Yeah, I think he should have gotten number two, to be perfectly honest, but Bruce Campbell gets that spot.
Yeah. There he is. All animated Giphy for me, Michael Emerson.
Ah, yes, from Lost. Now, I don't remember the Bruce Campbell one. Do you remember which one he was in?
No, I don't.
Standalone episode as a demon who desperately wanted to be a father. I don't remember which one that is, but it sounds like one to hunt down.
That rings a bell. Oh, God, is that the one where the women wake up having visions of a demon ripping the fetus from their uterus?
That's a storyline that has been done in so many different fantasy and horror and sci-fi shows that I get them all confused. Like, I've watched Reaper, I've watched Buffy, I've watched Angel, and some of those plots, like, I can't keep them all straight. Is that X-Files? Is it not X-Files?
I get that. I feel like that was one X-Files definitely did, and it was disturbing. Like, they did it really, really well. And I feel like that was the Bruce Campbell one.
X-Files does take those things that are like, oh, God, here's a werewolf story, and then it makes them really good. Like, just a couple of nights ago, Lisa and I watched Shapes from season one, and they never say the word werewolf, but they show you a couple of really cool, like, just glimpses of transformation scenes.
Right.
And I think it's great. I remember not liking that episode at all when I was a teenager, but this time around, I was transfixed.
It's because they're so good. They're just so good. Where do you want to go next? We could talk about more guest stars or go back to the episodes or...
Oh, why don't we mine this list for a little while here?
Okay.
Do you like Michael Emerson?
I don't know who he is.
Well, he was fine in the episode. It's the Brady Bunch one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Which is the one that has Buck Bundy in.
Oh, yes. I don't Bird think he Bundy. Makes this list either.
No, he doesn't. I was quite disappointed with that.
Yeah, I know that you mean Bud and not Michael Buck. Emerson. Buck is the dog.
Yeah, Bud Bundy, that was it. It's kind of... this dude was only famous because he was in Lost. It's, it's not as big as... He's not a movie guy, is he? You know.
Wasn't he also... I seem to remember him being pretty early on in the Battlestar Galactica remake.
Can't remember. Barely watched it.
I think he showed up as a is he or isn't he a bad guy kind of role.
He does do bad guy well.
Well, he does disturbed, weird, creepy guy really well. And that leaves it open for is he a victim or is he the disgusting killer kind of guy?
Yeah. He is the bad guy in the Brady Bunch episode, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Jodie Foster one's a bit odd.
Well, because she doesn't actually ever appear on film.
Yeah. She's just a voice.
Right. She's the tattoo on the guy's arm that talks to him and tells him to kill things.
Weird.
It is an odd little appearance to do, isn't it?
Mm.
I like Jodie Foster a great deal and had a crush on her when I was a little kid. I watched Freaky Friday quite a few times, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
You see, I'm a bit older than you, so it's Bugsy Malone for me that I remember her from first.
Bugsy Malone.
Bugsy Malone.
In my latter years, I watched Contact quite a few times.
I guess the biggest film that she did outside of Silence of the Lambs was... was it Witness? No, it wasn't Witness. What was the other one? What is the name of it? Sexy Susie. What? Sexy Sadie. I've got to pull up a page. Jodie. it was a great, great film about a rape. The Accused.
Oh, The Accused. I don't remember that.
Great film. Really, really good.
Well, she's Jodie Foster, isn't she? She's a Hollywood staple.
Taxi Driver when she was very young, 1976.
And Bugsy. Well, she was a Disney child star. Freaky Friday and the other ones. You know.
Lisa says, every time that Jodie Foster comes on screen, she mentions how she talks out of the side of her mouth. Now, here's where we could get potentially into a little bit of a disturbing, offensive territory. You have a podcast called Do Ask, Do Tell, correct?
Yeah,
that's
we do.
Right, yes.
About LGBT issues.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, is this a thing? Using your expertise, is there a connection at all, a correlation between someone being lesbian and talking out of the side of their mouth like Jodie Foster?
No.
I don't know that such a study has been done.
In my mind, there's this weird thing, like, you know, when you have a gay man, there's the proclivity for a lisp. When you have a gay woman, they have the talking out of the side of their mouth kind of syndrome.
It's kind of, yeah. I don't know. I would look into this. It's one of those, I don't know that anyone's thought of that before.
Don't think there's any empirical evidence for either observation.
Well, here's the anecdotal evidence, which, as we know, is not really evidence at all.
It's not. It's just a story. Go on.
But my beautiful wife, who I love so dearly and is not a homophile whatsoever. Homophobe, sorry. She might be a homophile. I don't know. But she can pretty much look at a screen and say that person is talking out of the side of their mouth. They're a lesbian and be correct 95% of the time.
I think she's got incredible gaydar. but it might not necessarily be anything to do with vocalizing out the side of my... I'm going to have to watch for it now. You've planted a seed in my mind. I'm going to watch for lesbians talking out the side of their mouth.
Watch for it and report back, because this has been a long-running dispute in our house, whether there is any kind of... I don't know, whether there's any kind of physiological causation or correlation or whether there's maybe some sort of an affectation that's caused by... some sort of a social trend, like the lisp with the gay men. Again, coming back to that.
We're talking about the female equivalent of the gay voice.
Yes.
There's a documentary about this.
Not all gay men have the voice, but only gay men have that voice.
Correct. You
know? And so is there a female lesbian equivalent? I don't know. I've not noticed it. I don't know.
I really haven't noticed it.
But now I'll be curious.
But yeah, I'm going to look out for it in future.
Okay.
Doug Hutchison is next on the list.
Now, he's a creepy motherfucker. In real life, I have problems with Doug Hutchison.
In real life?
Well, are you familiar with his personal life at all?
Not whatsoever. I'm barely even really familiar with him being some sort of a star where he would qualify for this cameo list.
Well, he's in The Green Mile, and he plays Percy in The Green Mile, and so everyone hates him, pretty much. Because he's a vile character. He's a horrible, horrible... Have you ever seen The Green Mile with Tom Hanks?
It's one of those things where I've seen it in its never in its entirety, but I've seen it in pieces enough that I've pieced the story together. I don't like the movie. I think it's boring.
It's that at the end, watching that film is one of two occasions on which I've seen Craig Bevan cry. So
that's the other reason I'm not very fond of it. It's emotionally manipulative, and it doesn't have the, I don't know, it hasn't earned the right to be emotionally manipulative. Like, Shawshank Redemption is a really good movie, and it earns the right to manipulate your emotions. I don't think that The Green Mile comes close to being able to do that.
Fair enough. But anyway, that's why people sort of find him a bit creepy, right? Because we hate him because he's in that. But he also married this girl. I have to look her up.
Courtney.
Stodden,
yeah. And it's all just such a weird thing because she's like 9 or something.
She was 16 years old the first time they got married.
Do you mean when they got married? Have they been married more than once?
They're currently engaged a second time.
Oh, right. Okay, fine. So the first time they got married, she was 16 and he was sort of...
51.
There you go.
Okay, so pedophilia, sure.
Mm-hmm. So there's that, and also she's weird.
What do you mean she's weird?
She's fucking weird. She's not like a normal person. She's like a human Barbie doll.
Oh, she is, yeah. Yeah, she is.
She's weird.
Now, it's very easy to mix up people's on-stage persona or on-screen persona and what they might be like in their private life. But here's my question. Was Doug Hutchison weird before or after or during or all of the above his appearance as Toombs on The X-Files?
I don't know.
Because he is a weird, creepy mofo in this, well, two episodes. He's got two episodes of The X-Files.
Yeah, he's creepy.
We watched Toombs. It's very early in season one, Lisa and I did. And it's one of the episodes that got Lisa to stand up and shout, you know, he's a damned alien. She was guessing that right from the first time she saw him. He's not, by the way. But
no, he's not, is he? He's a weird creature.
Right.
Of some unknown description. A mutant that will never take up arms against the lesser evolved humans. I'm getting into X-Men again. So, yeah, he's weird. Sorry, I'm looking at Courtney Studden's Wikipedia page now. And it's just a list of weird.
She's a pageant queen.
This is it. It's what happens when you take those weird, twisted little kids that get forced into pageants. When they grow up, but she was 16.
She's got the I was bullied when I was a child because of the way I looked mentality as well, which means so I got massive plastic surgery as soon as I was able to, and now I've got boobs and people don't call me a boy anymore. And she, you know, you got all the way from being mistaken for a boy to being a Barbie doll, and that's what she is. And her mother is her manager, and she'd done the pageant and beauty queen circuit, and now she's on reality TV as his wife.
So kind of like it's all very Honey Boo Boo, but a bit older.
But wait, really. wait. Did the X-Files ever do a pageant episode?
I don't know.
It seems like a missed opportunity if they didn't. Mm.
It does, actually. You could get some nice weird stories out of that.
I mean, there's the one about the carny folk. And if we're going to be honest, I mean, pageantry isn't really that far off from carny folk. It's just that we are willing to say that pageant participants are attractive.
Well, they're more attractive than carny folk.
I don't know. That's in the eye of the beholder. I think it's kind of disgusting to lift up these pageant folk because they're sexually attractive, especially the very young ones.
Oh, no, that's weird.
There's this weird conflation of carny folk, you know, the whole problem with Honey Boo Boo is that you say, oh, well, this is all about making yourself attractive, and you put them in swimsuits or ball gowns or whatever, and you're treating them like a sex object that should be 25 or 30.
Yeah, that's fucked up. That said, though, the point of Honey Boo Boo is that you're just watching an absolute train wreck of human existence. It's really dark and twisted as a concept, but that's essentially what it is. You're watching just the worst elements of humankind getting on in life, and it upsets you that they can do that, but also you can't stop watching it. Don't ever start. It's horrible. It's terrible. They're terrible people. Brad Dourif. No, I've skipped over one. Felicity Huffman. I'm just
but
moving.
But it's okay. Yeah, it's okay to skip that one because she was in the one that we already talked about. We started the very first X-Files episode we talked about was, what was it called, ICE?
Yes.
It's the one that's Ice Station Zebra slash John Carpenter's The Thing ripoff.
Yeah.
Or homage, yeah. However you want to look at it.
Yeah. Brad Dourif, who we'll all know from Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
And he kills Christopher Lee, whose name escapes me in the film. He's Christopher Lee. It doesn't matter, does it, really?
Every time that I look at Brad Dourif, all I see is a British version of Tim Robbins. And I don't even know if Brad Dourif is British. I'm assuming he is.
I really don't think he is.
He looks British, and I don't know what I mean by that. It might very well be some sort of weird
he's an American
xenophobia.
Yeah, he's really? American. He was right, born in Huntington, West Virginia.
Then every time I look at Brad Dourif, I see another American Tim Robbins.
Yeah, I can, he is very close to Tim Robbins. I was confused with Tim Roth for a little while and wanted to say, but he is British.
Tim Roth, definitely Tim British. Roth.
Yeah, you meant Tim Robbins, who's an entirely different person. I'm not going to say the name of the next person on the list. Do you want to do that?
Zelko Ivanek.
Yes. There you go. He's one of those people who's on television and you don't know his name. He might be in that documentary.
Well, his name is to blame for that.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true. I don't remember him in any of those things. Was he in Heroes? Okay.
And True Blood. I remember his face from True Blood.
Never seen a single frame of True Blood.
You know what? True Blood is... Okay, I'm one for cheesecake. You know that? And it's probably morally and ethically inexcusable, but I like cheesecake. If you're into cheesecake, awesome. Go watch the first 2-3 episodes of True... Or 2-3 seasons, rather, of True Blood. It goes downhill very fast from there.
You see, I can't do that. I know you can do that. I can't do it. If I'm going to watch it, I'm watching all of it. From the first one to the last one. I can't just abandon a series partway through.
Well, let me pose a question to you then.
Okay.
Do you like boobies?
Boobies?
I yes.
Everybody likes boobies. What are you on about?
You might want to watch some True Blood.
Okay, then. I'll
I'm just saying.
Boobs. Okay.
Tony Todd is next on the list, and I love this dude. He's in a really good episode, too. It's the one where there's the vet, and they've done something to him to make him so that he can't sleep again.
Yeah. Oh, that's a brilliant episode.
It's a really good episode, and he's a really good actor. So there's a compounding factor there.
And to be clear, we mean war veteran, not animal doctor.
Well, that would be a veterinarian.
Yes, okay. We call them the vet, so...
So do we, but...
All right.
I mean, all things being equal.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. Tony Todd is just awesome in that he is the Candyman, and he crops up in... If you watch television long enough, you're going to see Tony Todd. That's just a given. Especially
if you travel in our circles.
Yeah, and if you travel in our circles, you're going to see Tony Todd... quite often. You reach a point where you're watching new series waiting for Tony Todd to turn up at some point.
Have you seen his IMDb list?
I haven't, but I bet it's obscene.
My thumb is getting tired from scrolling.
Yeah. 183 credits.
So prolific.
There you go.
So prolific.
He's in so many things. My favorite role is in the fact he is Worf's brother in
yeah,
Next Gen and Deep Space Nine. And they have a wonderful story with him in Deep Space Nine. You've got to see that. But yeah, Tony Todd's just brilliant. Of course he's in the X-Files.
He was in Next Gen as well, three of those.
Yes, he was.
But he's the kind of actor who is willing to say yes to any project. So you're really only going to recognize the names of one out of maybe every 15 or 20 titles that are on his IMDb page. I mean, some of these things, they've never even probably surfaced. Scream at the Devil. Prelude to Axanar. Army of the Damned.
I would watch them. All of these.
Dust of War. 14 episodes of The Young and the Restless. That was not expected.
That's a soap opera, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Like one of the cheesy, crappy daytime American soap operas.
Yes.
Oh, dear. He's been in some right shit.
And a lot of these are cartoons, too. He does a lot more animation voiceovers than I thought that he did.
He's got a fantastic voice, though.
He's deep and grumbly.
Yeah. Oh, you could sew a role for Tony Todd's voice in so many animated things. He's brilliant for that.
It's like rolling a bucket of gravel around.
Yeah. He's ever so good. Then we covered the CCH Pounder we talked about in a previous episode, didn't we?
Yeah, she was in Dwayne Barry.
That's it. Mm.
She's got the best name ever, too. She should be a porn star. CCH if nominative Pounder. Determinism. Yeah, Pounder. If nominative determinism were in play.
Yeah. Mark Ralston, who I don't recognize. He was in Shawshank.
He was one of the guards. If the article that we're looking at, he's wearing a turban in the GIF.
Yeah.
If he had his turban off, you would recognize him.
Right, okay. I certainly recognize Terry O'Quinn.
Oh, I'm sorry. He's not a prison guard. He's one of the prisoners.
He's the guy who keeps raping Andy Dufresne.
Yes.
The only bit, I need to watch Shawshank again. It's been a while since I've seen it. I need to watch that again.
It's good, you know, according to IMDb.
Hmm.
It's the best movie ever made, according to IMDb, right?
Well,
isn't it number one on the top 250?
I think it moves between that one and Godfather or something. Godfather 2, which is the better film.
Terry O'Quinn is next on the list. Now, here's another one where he's been around forever and ever and ever. When did you first become aware? Was it Lost of Terry O'Quinn? Or tell me it was before, please.
Way before. Terry O'Quinn plays Howard Hughes in the Disney film The Rocketeer.
The Rocketeer. That's my boy.
And hang on, I need to go to Terry O'Quinn's IMDb because it might be earlier than that.
Now, there's rumors in dark corners of the internet that Disney is planning to remake The Rocketeer.
Why not? I don't know. I mean, I have fond memories of it, but why not? Not that it needs really remaking. That said, I've not, maybe the special effects could be updated. It's been a while since I've seen it. I don't know how well it'll hold up now. But as a film, it's fine. You also wouldn't want Timothy Dalton necessarily playing the bad guy. He's terrible in it.
Mm-hmm.
He is genuinely a bad actor in that film.
It's not a good movie, but no. It is a perfect movie for what Disney wanted it to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun film, and clearly I forget how bad Timothy Dalton is. It's when he becomes a German at the end. That's when it really is. His fake German accent is really quite appalling. Clearly he went to the same accent school as that guy from The Living Daylights and his Russian accent.
Yeah. And Kevin Costner.
And Kevin
Prince
Costner.
Prince of Thieves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just one of those things. So yeah, maybe they could remake it. Gosh, he was in Young Guns, Terry O'Quinn.
He does so much television acting. Look at all these things. Full Circle, 6 episodes. Hawaii 5-0, 14 episodes. Gang Related, 13 episodes. This dude works constantly.
Yeah. Mm. He was in Space Camp.
Who was he in Space Camp?
The launch director.
Oh, right. That's a kind of background.
And you forget that he was in Alias with Jennifer Garner.
I've never seen a frame of that either.
You know, it's not that great.
That's probably why.
Unless, again, you like cheesecake, but network cheesecake, where you never actually get to see the boobs, which is why True Blood really has the upper hand there, or the upper boob.
Now, if I'm going to watch something for boobs, I'm going to have to get boob. I think that's part of it. Why would I do that to myself?
Now, look at this. This is an interesting trigger. IMDb, X-Files, Terry O'Quinn, 2 episodes, but he's playing 2 different characters.
Entirely feasible.
Lieutenant Brian Tillman in 1995, Aubrey, which is kind of a crappy episode. That's the one where, if I remember it correctly, and I haven't seen it for probably 20 years, but it's the one where there's like the girl and she's having flashbacks of murdering people, and she finds out that she's inheriting like these memories and urges from her father or something.
Could be. Don't remember that one.
But then he also plays the Shadow Man in a 2002 episode.
Well, I mean, we quite often get actors playing several characters throughout a series, especially in sort of your one-offs and that sort of thing. I'm discovering it was quite common in things like The Twilight Zone and Outer Limits and...
You've come back and do several.
Yeah, even things like Space 1999 had several Brian Blessed appearances. And
he was always a different character.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I'm quite surprised that Tony Todd was never brought back for a creature feature, because he usually does prosthetics and makeup and all that sort of thing.
He does lots of stuff, doesn't he? I don't know. There could be many there will be many reasons why something wouldn't happen. But it's good it was, and he has an upcoming thing, TV movie. He's just been in sort of, again, if you move in our circles, you'll see something with Terry O'Quinn in it at some point. He's just one of those people.
Next on the list is Michael J. Anderson, who I don't recognize. He looks a little bit like Mr. Bean in this still frame. And he was in the X-Files episode Humbug, and I can't remember which one that is. Is that the one where there's all the bugs that eat the people?
Oh, you do recognize him. You do.
Is he the little dude in Twin Peaks?
Yes.
Okay.
There you go.
That's exactly who it is. He was in Carnival, Mulholland Drive, Snow White a little while ago. He's been in loads.
Right.
But next on the list is Tony Shalhoub, and that is lots to talk about.
Okay.
Let me see his face.
Tony Shalhoub, he's Monk.
Now then, Monk's a funny one, because it has technically been on here, but no one's seen it.
I don't know a damn thing about Monk.
My mum and dad watched it, and they loved it.
It is very much a mom and dad show. This is, what was the show that we watched about the doctor who went to Wales and was afraid of blood and
Doc Martin.
Yes. Monk is the American equivalent of Doc Martin.
Right. Yeah, my mum and dad loved it. And they've recommended it to me on a number of occasions. Was he in Wings?
Yeah.
He was in Wings. You'll know him best though from Galaxy Quest.
Yes.
Of course.
And just yesterday I saw there's a Galaxy Quest TV show in the works.
I don't know how I feel about that.
He was in Men in Black too.
He was, yes.
Men in Black and Men in Black 2.
He's dude what got his face blown off and then grew it back.
That's right.
But the X-Files episode that he was in, he was the guy whose shadow would come to life and kill people.
Unless it was caused by diffused light. So he was safe in the train station. I remember that one. He was another guy who ended up in a room through a tiny window at the end.
Yeah. With the...
What else are you going to do with him?
Being done to forever.
I don't know.
What are you going to do with
Clearly
these guys?
Clearly, he's in the same complex as Giovanni Ribisi and Magneto. I don't know.
They are dangerous people, and they need trapping well in an environment that will not play along with their powers.
I kind of think that it's like this place where you can... It's like, you know, the warehouse where they put the Ark of the Covenant at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah.
It's like
I just muttered top men under my breath, so yeah, it's good.
It's that's what it is. We've got top men working on it. Really? Yeah. No, we've just put them in a room and left them.
It's about 4 miles underneath Quantico.
It's all you can do. The man controls the electricity, for fuck's sake. What do you want to do with him?
It's like near the Earth's core, directly below Quantico.
Yeah, that's where it is. Tony Shalhoub, you die if you go near him. No one's working on that. Leave him in a room. Sorry, Tony.
How are you going to research him?
Exactly, you'll just die.
Leave him the fuck alone. Post his food to him.
Exactly. No one came out of that episode like injured by him. You were sucked into a black hole.
Vapored.
He gets Gone. You die. That's it. So that's all they do with these people. So yeah, John Neville, I don't remember.
John Neville?
The well-manicured man. Oh, right, okay, yes.
He's one of the big players in the cabal.
He is.
Pulling all the strings behind the scenes in the X-Files. Five, six episodes you see him. I'm not sure whether he really ever even has any speaking lines.
He generally is one who will be displeased with the cigarette-smoking man.
Hmm.
And disagree with him and that sort of thing. And why don't we kill Mulder?
Yes, exactly. Because Mulder might be my son.
Yeah,
I know who he is now.
Yeah, did that help?
It's Baron Munchausen.
Yes, he is Baron Munchausen.
And he's British, but he moved to Canada when he was younger.
Peter Boyle. Now, Peter Boyle's just a legend in every sense of the word, so You know, and it's a really good episode. He's so nice and quiet.
Well, this is Clyde Bruckman's final repose. It's one of my favorite episodes. And it's because you don't have to worry about the grand conspiracy. You don't have to worry about aliens showing up. You don't have to worry about a werewolf or something overpowering you. It's just a killer on the loose. And how do you catch the killer? And the X-File is all about, you know, him being a psychic. So it's a lot smaller. It's not quite on the scale of a stage play, but at the same time, you don't have, you know, UFOs flying around.
Mm.
It's a much more intimate episode.
It's nice that the episodes of The X-Files give you time to relax. There are ones where it's just don't stress about it. Just nice, relaxed, calm episodes.
From what I've seen, the characters that are at the center of each show are either sympathetic or not. And it strikes me that he plays a more sympathetic character that you can get behind and like, yeah.
He's not wearing a badge. That's the rule in The X-Files. Is the character wearing a badge? It's a bad guy or grumpy.
Yeah.
Is the character not wearing a badge? Then it could go either way. But unless he's directly demonstrating some sort of, you know, ability to stretch his hand or levitate or use lightning, you're probably fine.
There never was really a good policeman in The X-Files, was there?
They all have the FBI show up. And in real life, I can tell you from personal experience, when the FBI walks onto the scene, the local police are like, yes, sir, anything you want, sir. Okay, we'll do that, sir. Sure, just tell us what you want us to do. In The X-Files, though, the FBI shows up, Mulder and Scully roll up on the scene, and the local sheriff is like, fuck you guys, you're not coming into my town.
Yeah, it's like, we don't need the FBI around here.
Get out of our town. We don't want you to know our secrets.
But not in real life. In real life, it's all just
snap to, hup hup.
Yeah.
Can you show me your rifle?
Because real life isn't really like in the heat of the night, like I've been led to believe it is. I have an inherent distrust of small-town American sheriffs now. Purely based on this. I've never met one, never been to an American small town, for that matter. And yet, still, I know they're all corrupt and will get me in some way and are connected to the local devil-worshipping ring. Because just, you know, sorry, small town sheriffs, I'm sure you're all very nice people who work very hard.
Clyde Bruckman is a great episode, though, and it's entirely based on the greatness of Peter Boyle. And here's where I know that we're going to disagree on some things. You hate Everybody Loves Raymond, which is a very odd sentence to say.
Ah, but I totally appreciate Peter Boyle in that show.
I could watch the Frank show all day long.
That I would watch. The problem I have with Everybody Loves Raymond is the dynamic between Raymond and his wife. Because you just think, look, divorce the woman.
Yeah.
Just divorce the woman. She clearly hates you. There's no doubt about this.
I don't even think he likes her.
Divorce her now. And that was the whole show. But Peter Boyle in it is brilliant.
I know that this isn't the purpose of this particular episode of Remote Patrol, but let me quickly defend Raymond and his wife. Because at times, Everybody Loves Raymond seems to be a parody of my very own life.
Okay.
I'm a journalist. Ray's a journalist. We both have the same kind of wife who's very tired of babysitting us and setting us straight when we act foolish and stupid and hard-headed. And sex is always out there, willing to be argued about.
Does your mom and dad live across the road?
No, but it would be helpful with the kids. Not too close on the road, but maybe a half an hour away would be fine.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And I'm Raymond not has twins. Over this. I have twins.
You have twins, yeah.
You kind of are Ray.
A little bit.
That was brilliant.
TJ Walsh. No, I'm sorry. JT Walsh was also in The X-Files. He's number 17 on this list. The actor who excels at playing sleazy middle-aged bureaucrats, it says.
He does, and he is. That's it.
What's his surname, JT?
Walsh.
Walsh.
He's got a face that you'll recognize. He's been a prison warden in everything, including The X-Files.
He's also judges and crooked cops and all kinds of things.
He's the person in authority that you can't trust.
My most hated character of his was in Good Morning Vietnam. He played
yes.
particularly repellent colleague of Robin Williams.
Well, that was his role. That was, in everything was that horrible. He was in, he was that person. That's what he did. That's what he did.
He was in A Few Good Men. I bet his character was similar in that as well, yeah.
Oh, come on. In A Few Good Men, you're either Tom Cruise, Demi Moore, or you're one of the bad guys. That was everyone was bad in that film. That was the thing. Number 18. Oh, that's Thingy from Firefly.
Yes, I recognize him now.
I do. I recognize him now. Yes.
Have we ever talked about this problem before? The problem where there's an actress who you know to be incredibly good looking, very, very sexually attractive from later things, but then you go back and you see something from when they were a child and you have to really control yourself.
We have discussed this.
Who is this?
It's an odd thing.
I don't have this list in front of me, you see, so.
This is Jules State.
How is a first name spelled? It could be anything.
J-E-W-E-L.
You see, I thought it was that. And the surname? State. Oh, there it is. Jewel State. Okay.
She is the cute mechanic from Firefly and Serenity. What wants to get with the Dr. Simon.
It is an odd, weird thing. It's just one of those odd, weird things.
It's like seeing Kirsten Dunst in what's the vampire film with Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise based on the Anne Rice novel? Interview with the Vampire. Yeah.
I've just sent you a link to the article.
I'm opening it now.
Okay, she's gone back up the stairs now, but I just want you to know that my wife just kind of mooned me as she was going up the stairs. It was pretty funny. I wish we had this on webcam.
She'll be glad we don't, though, so...
But Jewel State was the girl at the bottom of the well from the episode Oubliette, which might as well be The Silence of the Lambs.
I don't remember that one at all. Clearly, I do need to watch all of the X-Files again.
It was just the same thing as Buffalo Bill. I mean, she was the girl that the psycho kept at the bottom, and it was up to Mulder and Scholder. It was up to Scully and Mulder to be all Jodie Foster.
Scholder and Mulder.
I have to struggle not to say that, by
There's so many computations, it's so easy to do. I think we all just deserve a break on this, and we shouldn't ever take the piss out of each other.
What, when someone says Scholder and Mully?
That's absolutely fine.
Yeah. I don't recognize the kid in number 19.
Nor do I. He's apparently a world-class hottie, according to MTV, but Kevin Zegers...
Is that a professional world-class hottie? Is that a like actor? But I don't know.
I need to see his hotness factor now.
That's a fairly non-specific thing.
Z-E-G-E-R-S. Have no idea who this person is.
I mean, he might just work at a bank or something, but be really
good looking.
Yeah,
he is pretty gorgeous, I'm afraid.
And also, he's in one of the Scully is a Catholic episodes, which, I dislike the religious stuff.
Yeah.
Especially in the X-Files. The X-Files has a little bit of a problem there. On one hand, it's a really, really great atheist show because when you watch it for a little while, you're like, okay, well, now I understand why people shouldn't believe stupid shit because it only works on screen. So it kind of forces you to be really, really cautious about what evidence you accept. Like Mulder is the perfect example of why you should be an atheist. He's always chasing after things and making leaps of logic that you shouldn't make. And of course, he's validated when he does it, but... In the real life, you never will be. But on the other hand, the X-Files always does this terrible thing where they're like, well, if Mulder can believe in aliens, then Scully can believe in God, and they're just the same thing, right?
No, they're not, though. But having said all of this, I used to work with a Christian doctor, and it always blew my mind. So...
That someone who is so steeped in and whose entire profession is based on evidence.
And science and empiricism. Yeah.
Could that when they home at night, they sublimate that entirely.
Yeah. And say, well, the ultimate answer to the questions that can't be answered is God. Or God is the gaps between. No. No.
You wouldn't have done well in an exam at uni.
It was concerning, you know? And at the end of sessions with patients, he'd say God bless as people left the room. You didn't get taught that in medical school.
I guess that's fine. And if people want to do that, that's their own business. I just don't understand it because to me it seems inconsistent.
What I think it also says when a doctor's saying it is, I can only go part way, but you need an empirical, strange, supernatural being to do the rest. I can only do a little bit, which kind of makes you lose faith in their ability the more that they give to supernatural stuff. I don't know, it's weird.
Well, I tell you what, do you want to do just one more, the next one on this list, and then go? Because I've got atomic trivia work coming up here. But do you want to real quick talk about Michael Berryman, number 20 on the list?
Yeah, he was born to be an actor.
Because honestly, what else would he do?
Exactly. If he wasn't an actor, he'd be feared.
Maybe he should be. I mean, that's a dude that looks like he could just take you out with a punch.
Yeah.
Let's put aside the whole deal with his face and all of that. If you don't know who we're talking about, he's dude what played Sloth in The Goonies.
Yeah.
He's built like a football player. And I'd honestly be surprised. Did he play football? I'll bet he did.
He got his nose somehow. I mean, that nose is the letter S.
Michael Berryman is an American actor, horror movies, Wikipedia, searching for the word.
He was not Sloth in The Goonies.
He was not Sloth in The Goonies?
He was not Sloth in The Goonies.
See, this is why I actually should research things before I shoot my mouth off.
Yeah,
does he not look like Sloth from The Goonies?
Well, a bit, but I think it's not him.
Berryman played Pluto in Wes Craven's 1977 horror film The Hills Have Eyes and The Hills Have Eyes Part 2. Oh, he was in My Science Project. Do you remember that movie?
No, but I do remember Weird Science.
Armed Response, Evil Spirits, The Guyver. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Star Trek The Next Generation, Highway to Heaven. His pedigree is strong, but does not apparently include The Goonies.
Nope.
Okay, now I need to know who the guy from The Goonies is. Because I really, really thought that they were the same person. John Matuszak.
I think this guy's big thing is The Hills Have Eyes 1 and 2. They were big horror films. And good early Wes Craven stuff. Incredibly creepy and quite weird.
All right. And the condition that Michael Berryman's got, which gives him his strange appearance, is hypohidrotic ectodermal dysplasia. It's a rare condition which leaves him with no sweat glands, hair, fingernails, or teeth.
Wow. That's a weird one.
That is an odd one. I've never even heard of that. I wonder, is there any information? Can you click on a link and get more information about that?
I will certainly Google search it. But there's no link there, but I can...
Do you know who it puts me in mind of? Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I'm just looking for the rate of occurrence. I want to know if this is like one out of every 5 million people or what.
It puts me in mind of the guy who plays Omar in The Wire.
Oh, okay.
Whose name I've forgotten. Who has a massive scar across the middle of his face from being attacked with a knife. And he'd always wanted to be an actor, and then he got this injury and thought that was his acting career over. When in actual fact, the reverse was true, that, okay, something potentially disfiguring has happened to you, but in actual fact, you've made yourself an astoundingly interesting actor, and you're going to get lots of work based on that.
Right, it's actually quite common, this, you know, scarily. There's lots of different ectodermal dysplasias, but it's the most common one. And it's estimated to affect at least 1 in 17,000 people worldwide.
Is it a born with or a catch?
It's a born with.
Okay, we're all good then.
Meanwhile, John Matuszak, who did play Sloth in The Goonies, apparently does not have a condition, so that was all makeup. And he was a football player.
There you go. Yeah. That answers a lot of questions.
So I just... fumbled a lot of information. That's a joke that you probably don't get because you don't know American football.
No, I understand fumbling.
Excellent.
We say fumble. Well, that's fine. And the kid that played Chunk isn't fat anymore either. So that's the Goonies
and
for you.
The other day at Target, I saw a Chunk action figure.
Really?
There's this line, and I can't remember what it is. Reaction something. It's basically a play on things from yesteryear, but they have all kinds of action figures from, you know, 80s movies, 70s movies. They have Predator action figures and Spock action figures and Goonies. I saw Big Trouble in Little China ones, which I really should have snatched up, but
I know people that would want these things.
They're about $10 per action figure, and yeah, it's very, very tempting. I could have gotten the Three Storms from Big Trouble in Little China. It would have cost $30, and I would have had, you know, three tiny little 5-inch action figures to show for it.
And an explanation to give to a wife at some point.
That is probably the... See, there are advantages to being married to a Deborah.
Because she keeps you from making stupid decisions.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the best Raymond I can come up with on the spur of the moment.
Yeah.
But I think that is where we should draw it to a close. We are doing episode 4 of The X-Files next week. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Okay, absolutely. You got to tell me then what T-2000 episodes we're going
to
watch.
Well, we've not talked about Postmodern Prometheus, and I really, really want to.
I really like that one.
So that,
I really like that one.
I don't know necessarily that we need to watch any more for next week, because we're going to get caught up in this list again as well.
Oh, I'm sure
we will.
And
there's a lot of other stuff, so...
And Allison already agreed to a fifth episode, so there's plenty of room to stretch. There's no hurry to get this over with.
I'm just checking my schedule for next week. And it's good. And it's good.
Excellent. So with that, shall we say goodbye?
Goodbye, everybody.
We shall say goodbye. Good night.
Until next X-Files. Sorry, I'm just in love with this show.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Are you? I hadn't noticed.